I'm Brittany French.
Hey, I'm Rob McDonald.
And this is the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast.
We're going to talk about everything from fishing and hunting to hiking, paddling, and adventures on the Great Plains. We'll cover it all here.
So join us each episode and hear what's going on in the great outdoors on the Great Plains. Welcome to another episode of the Great Plains Outdoors Podcast. It seems like January is just scooting right along, and gosh, February is going to be here before we know it. But there's a lot of late season hunting getting ready to close, but that doesn't mean that there are not plenty of other outdoor opportunities on the Great Plains to take part in. Let's get this podcast started. Rob, what have you been up to lately?
Yeah, you know, it is sort of always this bittersweet sadness of seasons closing out, but then the horizon of new things kicking off. And I have been able to get outside a little bit lately on some field hunts for waterfowl. Our waterfowl see our ducks close on Monday along with upland. So I am kind of looking at the weekend, you know, trying, maybe I can get off work early on Monday. What can I get? Could I get a little quail walk in on Friday afternoon, maybe hunt some ducks on Saturday? Still trying to get my good out of that prairie chicken stamp I bought back in September. Mm-hmm. So yeah, this trying to iron all those things out. You know, one thing that I am looking forward to as the seasons close is that getting into the kitchen with some of that wild game meat and sharing that with my family. We put a fair amount, I think. Mm-hmm. I told you the other day, we did like close to 40 pounds of ground duck meat I made into sausage. So I'm excited to get in the kitchen and start using some of that stuff.
I think that is an open invitation to your house for dinner for really the rest of forever. Yeah, I have a little envy of you, Rob. Every time I see you post a picture, I'm like, dang it, he's at it again. I am falling behind.
You have to get out there.
It's a good life you're living. And I agree. Those wild meals are really special. My husband, as some of you already know this, he's not a hunter, and I'm slowly getting him into the sport of hunting. But what he loves the most, obviously, is being fed. And so it's really cool to sit down and share with him the story of the hunt and then also prepare a meal for him. I think that's pretty irreplaceable in the memory box.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know, upland birds can be like a pretty amazing table fare, I think. We eat a lot of waterfowl, deer. You were a part of, I don't know how many antlerless hunts.
A lot of deer. We hosted over 70 antlerless deer hunts this January. So right. In 3 weeks, 70 deer, and it was a lot, but it was awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's how I've spent most of my weekends here lately, is mentoring some kiddos in the blind. And I just think that's a really great way to teach these kids about, you know, obviously field to table, right? It's great mm-hmm. that these kids can harvest a deer and put it on their table or in their freezer, but more importantly about management of deer populations and why it's so important to maintain doe numbers, et cetera. And it's just neat to be part of that with these kids.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. And you did that upland bird hunt with the flush. You're a TV star now.
Yeah.
That was pretty awesome. You know, the camaraderie and the dogs, and I mean, just that upland bird hunting is pretty fantastic. And
yeah, it was pretty great running around with Ron and hunting with some of the kids. It was a good experience. We're looking forward to seeing that come out in July.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
Speaking of upland bird hunting, introduce our special guest today. And I think he's pretty familiar with hunting pheasants and quail. And that's Bob St. Pierre. I have that right, Bob?
Yeah, you got it. Nailed it. First try.
Nice.
The French Canadian version, as opposed to the South Dakota version, which would be pronounced Pierre.
Okay.
So you got, yeah, St. Pierre. You got me.
Is that Bob long on the Bob? If you're in South Dakota?
It might be. Yeah.
Okay.
The further south you go, the more you roll the O.
They got you. Yep. So, Bob, you're the chief marketing and communications officer with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. Is that accurate?
You got it. It's a mouthful of a title, but it just means that I'm in charge of marketing the organization's mission and the brand of our organization's Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. So yeah, I've been living my dream working for this organization since 2003.
I love it. Well, welcome to the podcast, Bob. This is exciting. I always love it when you meet somebody else who's in kind of their dream job, right? Where you love to hunt personally, and now you get to also incorporate that into your professional life. Thanks for what you do. And thanks for all that Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever does for, you know, the habitat out there and for hunting. I know all of us get to enjoy good upland hunting because of chapters and organizations like Pheasants Forever.
Yeah, thank you. Ultimately, and you mentioned this, the chapters, it's a real credit to the volunteer spirit across the country, particularly within Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever chapters that live locally in all these communities from Aberdeen to Salina to, Indianapolis. We have so many wonderful people that care deeply about chasing these birds with their bird dogs, but they know, it has to start with the land, right? And how we treat the habitat. And, it dates back to, at least in my mind, it dates back to Aldo Leopold writing in the 60s and talking about, how even in the 60s, people would go to the grocery store and buy a package of chicken and, that chicken just lived in a styrofoam package, and it was just it was just chicken wings. And people, I think, and even at that time, Leopold wrote about how people were disconnected from that animal and how that animal lived in land. And you look even forward from the 60s to today, and that's been perpetuated, right? Like, there are people that never leave the concrete jungle of inner city. Like, people never leave Kansas City or Omaha and don't know where a pheasant or a quail truly lives. If you say, well, it lives in the grasslands, that's a foreign concept to so many people. And that's really what I love to work for an organization built on the backs of volunteers who sort of get that full circle of life, that how we treat our land really is integral to this lifestyle, this upland lifestyle that we live out every fall, chasing birds to feed our families, but also to make us whole as human beings. Some of my best moments in my life are being out there in those grasslands and experiencing nature. And, it all connects back to living out your dream as a, working for a conservation organization.
Right on. So at Pheasants Forever, you guys are, I believe, primarily a habitat-based organization. Is that accurate?
Yeah. Our mission is wildlife habitat. So our goal, Pheasants Forever, so if you think about the country, pheasants live kind of middle America and everything north to, southern Canada. Mm-hmm. And the quail range with variety of species, right where you all are in middle America, Kansas, Nebraska, Illinois, Missouri, that's kind of what we sort of term the mixed bag states.
Right.
We have overlap between pheasants and quail, and then everything south and west, kind of the quail range. So our mission is to work with landowners and state and federal agencies to create habitat for pheasants and quail. So that takes the form of many different initiatives, some working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture on things like the Farm Bill, the Conservation Reserve Program. It can mean state-driven programs like a legacy amendment in Minnesota or I Will in Iowa, or even, at the local level, just trying to limit how much ditch mowing happens. Is it, something where people are like, what are you talking about, ditches? Yep. But the reality is ditches, in the grand scheme of habitat, will definitely take the 40 acres of CRP, mm-hmm. or the 400 acres.
Right.
Or the buffers along streams. There's so many benefits. But ditches, it's just amazing how many ducks, pheasants, quail nest in roadside ditches. So is something as simple as delaying roadside mowing until August 1st after nesting season can have a dramatic impact on the number of birds on the landscape. So, you know, it's looking for ways, big and small, that we can create habitat that will benefit our favorite birds. But it's not just singular in terms of pheasants and quail. When we create habitat, ducks benefit, whitetails benefit, monarch butterflies, honeybees, water quality, soil health, climate resiliency. It's like we all learn this in third grade, right? The web of life, everything's interconnected. And that's the beauty of an organization like ours that's focused on habitat, right? We're motivated by wearing blaze orange October through the end of January, right? Chasing birds, right? That's what we live for. That's our lifestyle. Mm-hmm. But to create those moments in the fall, you need habitat. And if we can plant that habitat, everything, the web of life, benefits, from the smallest of insects to human beings. So that's ultimately a long-winded way of explaining our mission is wildlife habitat, and it has a really, really holistic approach that benefits all of society.
Perfect.
Yeah, you got to appreciate that. And talk about going back to third grade. It's so true. I feel like we get really disconnected from our planet, right? Where we're living, why things are the way they are. And we can all certainly do better. That's a good message too. If we want to keep hunting pheasants and quail, we got to do our part. We all have to do our part.
Well, and you know, I tell people about this, and I'll make a statement that some people scratch their head and say, that's preposterous. But hunters and anglers are saving our planet. Like, legitimately, the work that's being done by Nature Conservancy, Ducks Unlimited, Rough Grouse Society, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, Mule Deer, pick your favorite species, Trout Unlimited, right? Pick your favorite species, and the work that's being done to restore habitat from trout streams to mule deer ranges to migration corridors to the uplands that our organization focuses on, you know, that is protecting our water quality from the Mississippi River all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. If you like to eat shrimp, Pheasants Forever is cleaning the water that goes down into the Gulf of Mexico to clean up that dead zone in the Gulf. Like, Pheasants Forever is helping you eat shrimp.
There you go.
It's not crazy. I mean, that's legitimately what conservation organizations, hunters and anglers are doing when they join organizations like ours, when they spend money on licenses and those PR dollars go back into the states to create habitat. It sounds preposterous, but we're the most active community, hunters and anglers, that are doing work to benefit all of society. And, you know, that's part of our organization's goal, is to get that word out there so people, you know, we're screaming it from the mountaintop. So it's wonderful that you invite me and other organizations on podcasts like this to be able to explain the connections that go beyond. You know, it's so easy for people to say, well, pheasants, they're just, you know, this imported bird that isn't even supposed to live here. It's like, well, let's put that behind us, because they've been here for century and they are kind of the signature wildlife species of the grasslands in the CRP program, and it's benefiting water quality. And you know, if you boil all that down, you think about everything that it's doing, that organizations like us are doing for the environment, it's really, really gratifying, you know, to be part of that Blaze Orange Army.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm.
See, you mentioned Kansas, Nebraska, Missouri, kind of our area, right? And on the Great Plains, so the spot on the spot as being this mixed bag. And You know, I can really relate to that because I actually live in the Flint Hills of Kansas. So we've got this, the largest intact preserved portion of tall grass prairie left in the world is out my back door. That area does fairly well with bob whites. I mean, it's going to fluctuate, you know, depending on moisture and what the bug hatch is like in the spring. And there's a lot of fire that happens here on purpose, you know. We don't have any pheasants in this area, and whether that's you know, I've heard all types of stories. It has to do with the chiggers and it has to do with humidity, and we've got a lot of rainfall, and we have a lot more clay in our soil. But you don't have to go very far west. In fact, out where Brittany's at, you know, she's around Wichita, and then you go on beyond where she grew up, right around Dodge. There's some quail around there, but you know, the pheasant is probably the primary game bird. But all the way across that state, the probably one of the lesser known birds is the greater and the lesser prairie chicken. And you know, there's a lek half a mile from where I'm sitting right now. I've spent a little time out around Hayes and Waukini and doing some duck hunting. You're sitting in the duck blind, sun's coming up, and you hear some wings. You look up and there's a lek of prairie chickens flying over the pond that you got decoys set on, which is pretty cool. And you know, all those birds exist because of the habitat that you folks are working on. And just a little bit maybe about some programs that you guys are doing around those, you know, what does that actually look like? So I'm just a Pheasants Forever member, or I'm working for the Nebraska Department of Wildlife and Parks, or Kansas Wildlife and Parks, or what, South Dakota is the pheasant capital of the world. They kill more rooster pheasants every year annually than any other state. What does that actually look like besides we like habitat, right?
Yeah, so a variety of scale of habitat work we do. So let's start at the federal level. We work with from the President of the United States to the U.S. Department of Agriculture on a piece of legislation called the Farm Bill every 5 years. Mm-hmm. And the next Farm Bill will be created in 2023. So we're coming up on the negotiation timeframe. So the Farm Bill has, you know, something on the magnitude of 70 or 80 million acres that it addresses. The biggest tool within the Farm Bill is the Conservation Reserve Program, CRP. And CRP is, if you track when CRP is the highest number of acres, so 07 and 08, that's surprised when the biggest wave of bird numbers were. And over the last decade or so, CRP acres have fallen and bird numbers have fallen. So our goal is to boost that back up. And it fluctuates based on the political winds and commodity winds of current time period. But right now, so beginning January 31st through March 11th, so we got a short window here, there's going to be a brand new CRP general signup. So CRP takes many different forms. There's continuous signups, there's signups specifically targeting pollinator habitat, quail habitat, but right now is like the biggest window for people that own land anywhere in the country. They can go into a local USDA service center or go to the Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever website, go to pheasantsforever.org/CRP and find one of our biologists close to you. And you could talk one-on-one with our biologists about how to apply for CRP. And it's a competitive process. I think they'll be on the magnitude of 3 million acres that will be enrolled in this window of time. So 3 million acres can have a huge benefit for pheasants, for prairie chickens, for quail. So, you know, on a macro level, we work really hard on private lands conservation at the federal level that boils down to the local level through the Conservation Reserve Program. Kind of the middle ground at the state level, we do all sorts of different initiatives, ranging from dedicated funding for natural resources. So states like Missouri, Arkansas, Minnesota have funding revenue streams, and then that take portion of income tax and dedicate it to habitat, right? We work with those states to target that those dollars for specific habitat benefits. A lot of states like Nebraska has an environmental trust fund that's in Minnesota's this way too, where lottery dollars, portion of lottery dollars go into habitat. And then we help those states target those funds for prairies and grasslands. We do a lot of work buying land. So we buy land with the help of our chapters and grants and people that donate land to us. And when we buy land or get land that's donated, the majority of it, we transfer to a state agency or a federal agency, and it becomes a permanently protected wildlife area. So if we donate it to the Minnesota DNR, for instance, it becomes a WMA, a wildlife management area, open to the public forever. If we donate it to the feds, then it becomes a waterfowl production area, open to the public forever. So in our history, since 1982, we've donated over, or we've helped protect, permanently protect more than 200,000 acres that are now permanent wildlife areas open to the public for hunting, for bird watching, for hiking. It's critical habitat that's protected forever and open. So that's a major statement of, right, creating access and protecting habitat for everybody. There's also a lot, we work with a lot of states. Nebraska is one that comes to mind as a signature one, the Open Fields and Waters Program. It's Nebraska's walk-in program. So at the federal level, we work on, it's called VPA HIP, and I apologize for the acronyms. I hate acronyms, but Voluntary Public Access Habitat Incentives Program. It's part of the Farm Bill that takes federal dollars and helps states open up private land for public access. In Nebraska, that program is Open Fields and Waters. We help administer that program for the Nebraska Game and Parks Commission, and it represents almost 400,000 acres of private land that a landowner has paid an extra incentive to open it up for public access. So again, it's habitat and access. So, you know, I could go on for an hour alone on the different programs that we work on to create habitat, to create access, and to create more hunters. Corners for conservation, you probably have seen that in Kansas. Center pivot irrigation corners, you've seen that in Nebraska, you've seen that in Colorado. Saline soils is an initiative we're working on in the Dakotas, where you've ever driven by an area of farm field that looks white, those soils are really salty in those areas and crops won't grow. It's not good for corn. But if you plant that to grass, the grass pulls that salt back down into the ground, creates habitat for pheasants, and it improves the soil health for that producer. So that's sort of the beauty of our organization. You know, we live by the model, farm the best, conserve the rest. Right. So whether it's saline soils, corners, buffers around streams, hillsides that are highly erodible, wetlands that have cattails, so we're looking for those opportunities to create habitat for the birds that we love, but then also to protect producers' bottom lines through making a more durable operation on the landscape.
Very cool.
Yeah, that's incredible. And I can't imagine how many people it takes to steer that ship too, right? I'm curious, you may not have this number. How many, I know, you know, on a paid level, there are so many employees with Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever. How many chapters do you guys have?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So chapters, we have 725 of them.
Wow.
Roughly 200 of those are Quail Forever, which means about a little over 550-ish are Pheasants Forever.
Wow.
So, and then within that, those 725 chapters, there's roughly 4,000 chapter officers. So these are volunteers who are presidents, habitat chairs, banquet chairs, treasurers that put on that local banquet and then are empowered with that money to do habitat work in their own communities. Really, really unique model. The only model like ours in the country where local chapters keep 100% control of the dollars they raise. The $35 per member that attends the banquet goes to headquarters to pay for the organization, to pay for the publication, to pay for the membership. But if you go to the chapter banquet in Colby, Kansas, and they raise $30,000, that $30,000 stays under the control of those chapter volunteers to do habitat work, to do youth mentor hunts in that community. So people can actually see the benefits of that chapter volunteerism in their own area or in their own state, right? If they want to do legislative work, right, or policy, mm-hmm, work at a state level. They also can donate to the federal level, us, to do work on the farm bill. So it's multi-layered. The other element to your question about number of people, right? Like, so number of employees, we have 418 employees that are paid employees. The vast majority of those employees are biologists. Next to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever is the number two employer of biologists in the entire country, which for me is like, holy cow, that's a massive statement. And what
put
that
your
tells
money
you,
where your mouth is, right?
It's 100%. We are an organization that is dictated by the science. We follow the science. And if we didn't, you know, our 80% of our employees are biologists would be up in arms. So
right, they'd be looking for a new job.
Right, they're the majority, right? We live by science. Science guides us. And I just think that statistic is a major statement to our members and supporters, and particularly bird hunters, that like, whoa, these folks are legit. You know, they live by the best science available.
So I know a lot more now about Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever than, and I've been a member for a number of years, right? So I appreciate that. I appreciate all the work you guys are doing. But I got to know, you know, somebody as a longtime employee of Pheasants Forever, Quail Forever, well, what's your hunting season like? Did you get out this year? You know, you just probably riding around in the pickup, you know, shooting birds from the road, just road hunting. You know, what's that look like when, you know, you've got all these chapters across the Great Plains, mm-hmm, and, you know, all these relationships. So did you have a good season? How were the birds? You know, speak a little bit to that.
Yeah. Well, if you can't tell, I'm pretty passionate about what I do for a living in the organization. And, you know, it really aligns well with who I am as a person. I grew up as a bird hunter. You know, my mom and my dad taught me how to bird hunt. Now, granted, I grew up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and the birds we chased were ruffed grouse and timber doodles. So I've learned more of the prairie birds as I've become an adult. We went to college in Minnesota, got a job in minor league baseball, and ended up, a couple of my best friends moved to Northern Iowa, and, they just meeting up with them when I was a single guy as when I started hunting pheasants and, then quail. And then as time went by, I got hired with Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. I got married. And one of the you know, sad things is that my wife and I have never been able to have kids. So that's a bummer. The positive side of that is that it means my weekends are pretty free. my wife's a huge Green Bay Packers fan, which means my Sundays are generally her Sundays are occupied watching football, and I get a lot of freedom. So I've been able to add bird dogs pretty frequently, and I have a pair of short hairs that need to run. So we hunt every weekend from September 1st through pretty much the end of January. Starting with sharptails and huns on the northern Great Plains when that opens up. I hunted sharpies in North Dakota, South Dakota in September. That transitioned to the rough grouse opener in mid-September in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and the UP. That's September 15th timeframe is when rough grouse, the woods open. Then I transitioned to pheasants in mid-October in Minnesota and the Dakotas. And then as snow begins to fall, I start looking south for hunts chasing quail. And I was able to hunt Arizona this season for merns and gambles and scalies, and then Kansas for bobwhite. So I generally in a given year have about 7 to 10 hunting states hunting licenses in my pocket. So I put a lot of miles on the truck, and my dogs live a pretty fun life. And so do I like to think that I represent our members who are super passionate about what they do and their bird dogs and living the outdoor lifestyle, upland lifestyle. And the majority of that hunting is done on public lands, like the majority of our membership.
Yeah, you got to really appreciate that. And, you know, you're clearly so enthusiastic about this lifestyle. I appreciate that a lot. But I'm curious, as a hunter myself and also being in the world of the outdoor industry, what's the best part of having a profession that means so much to you personally? Does that make sense?
Yeah, right on. So, you know, I guess I answer that by telling a little story. So I mentioned I worked in minor league baseball for 7 seasons. I started as an intern with the St. Paul Saints, a minor league baseball team in the Twin Cities, and worked my way up to assistant general manager in a span of about 7 years. And when you work in the minors, from Easter to Labor Day, you're at the ballpark every single day. So it's not like breaking rocks or heart surgery, you know, it wasn't terrible work, but you know, I didn't get chance to fish or spend much time outdoors. And if you, in the fall is when you sell the advertising for minor league baseball, the outfield billboards, logo baseball night. So if you're out hunting in the fall, then somebody else is selling the inventory around the baseball team for the upcoming year, and you don't make much, right? So it's sort of and I love baseball too, but so the long-winded, after 7 years, I applied for 2 jobs. I applied to be the director of marketing for the Detroit Tigers, my childhood team. My first bird dog was named after Alan Trammell, the Hall of Fame shortstop for the Tigers. My dogs all have Michigan-oriented names: Steve Eiserman, Gitchy Gumi, Escanaba. So I love Michigan. I love the Tigers. I love my home. I love the UP. This other job I applied for was director of public relations for Pheasants Forever. Mm. And so 19 years ago, I took the Pheasants Forever job, which ultimately in 05 also became Quail Forever when we launched Quail Forever. And while I'm still a Tigers fan, I'm wearing a Red Wings hat right now as we as we record. I love my Tigers and my Red Wings. I go to work every single day knowing that, you know, the wins and losses are not about a sport. This is about a lifestyle that's intimately part of the fabric of so many of us are as human beings. Mm. Creating habitat on the ground for wild birds, for families to bond, for friends to bond, for people and bird dogs, for us to be closer to God and nature, whatever your faith is. I believe that what I do and what this organization represents and what our volunteers do has a higher purpose. And so, again, really long-winded answer to your question about, you know, being able to do something that I'm passionate about. This is this is more than a job. It's a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not an 8 to 5. You know, I do a radio show in the Twin Cities every Thursday night and Saturday morning, completely unpaid. It's wonderful, but it's a platform for me to talk about our organization and conservation and just to pass on that enthusiasm, because I've recognized that I'm blessed. You know, there's a million people that would jump at an opportunity to have the job, the role that I have. And I never one day want to take that for granted. I know that there's, like I mentioned, there's 4,000 volunteers, 725 chapters. This organization is built on the backs of volunteers, and I'm one of those folks that gets paid to do this for a living. I never want to be taking that for granted or have anybody perceive that. So I want to be the best representation in enthusiasm, in ethics, in lifestyle, and safety. It's just incredibly important to me and to the organization to lead by example.
Mm. Well, I appreciate that. Thanks for sharing.
Very, very cool. So with that, I've got a little fun lightning round I want to throw at you here. I've got 8 questions. We'll move through them pretty quickly. And it's kind of a this or that. So
okay.
You've got to pick with the options you've got. And if you just can't do it, then you can go into a little bit more in depth. Sometimes folks are like, but what about, you know?
So do you want the explanation as to why I picked, or you just want me to pick?
That's up to you.
Okay.
It depends on how strongly you feel about the explanation.
Okay. So there's not a lot of rules here. I can Wild West it.
There you go. Yep.
All right.
Here we go. Number one. Upland bird hunting. Okay. That's the basis of all these questions. You had to pick 16 or 28 gauge.
28.
Okay. Crop stubble or CRP?
Oh, CRP.
Okay. You're hunting over flushing or pointing dogs?
Now you're going to get me in trouble with people, but this is no doubt for me, anybody that knows me, pointers.
Yep. Okay. Getting ready in the morning, you're heading out. Are you putting on upland chaps or brush pants?
That's changed over time. I'm a brush pants guy now. I used to be chaps, but I think hunting pants in general have improved dramatically in the last few years, where you get more lightweight and there's a couple of really good just straight up pants out there.
Okay. In the kitchen, fried pheasant like a schnitzel or pheasant noodles like a soup?
Schnitzel.
Okay. You had to pick. So we're saying like December, lots of places to hunt, northern plains or southern plains. So I'm going to say the north is like north of I-80.
Okay.
South is going to be, south of I-80, Kansas into Oklahoma, Colorado.
You know, so I'm going to hedge it a little bit. I'm going to pick a place, and you understand where I'm going here is, I'm going to go for the mixed bag sweet spot, which isn't necessarily dictated by north or south. Mm-hmm. When I think Nebraska, Kansas, it's a little bit more east west. So I'd probably pick that McCook, Nebraska, Norton, so I could get pheasants and bobwhites, and maybe a prairie chicken too.
Yep. I actually grew up at Logan, which is not very far from Norton. So,
I ended my season in Norton all by my lonesome with a couple of bird dogs and a 50-degree Sunday morning. And it was just gorgeous. It'll hold me over a little while. It was gorgeous. It was wonderful.
Yep. Okay. 2 questions left. You're going to go in a pickup or an SUV? You're on the road hunting birds.
I mentioned I don't have kids, so my dogs are babied in the SUV. We like to have it climate controlled. So SUV.
Okay. And you had to choose your favorite early season or late season upland hunts.
I'm gonna disappoint all sorts of folks here. I'm an early season. You know, give me 40 degrees, sunny, because you know I live in I live on the Canadian border, and trudging through heavy snow as a 5'6" guy kicks my tail. And I love snow. Don't get me wrong. I love winter, but have you ever tried to bird hunt with snowshoes or cross country skis on? No, it's damn near impossible. So give me snow-free early season long walks through the grass for pheasants, quail, grouse. And that would be my preferred time of year.
Cool. Nicely done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You did a good job there. I'm impressed. There was less explaining than I thought there would be.
Well, yeah. I try to pay attention to the rules.
I love it. Well, that's exciting. Bob, how do we, you know, people get involved with Pheasants Forever? One, but then also, how can they follow your adventures? So you go on Instagram or anything like that? How can people connect with you?
Yeah. Thank you for asking. So number one, COVID. So Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever has come through this pandemic really strong and really healthy financially, with one exception. Our membership is down 20,000 members. And I said that with four zeros, right? 20,000 members down. And that's because chapters across the country haven't been able to hold banquets largely for the last 2 years. So it's incredibly important if you're a Pheasants Forever, or I'm sorry, a pheasant hunter, quail hunter, prairie grouse hunter, if you care about the uplands. And frankly, let's push that out. You know, if you care about ducks, you care about rough grouse, whitetails, trout, your favorite species and the conservation organization that represents that species really needs you to get involved in the organization. As simple as going on the website, signing up to become a member, $35, and making a contribution. It's really been a struggle when banquets have been canceled across the country. So, you know, I'd love for you to join Pheasants Forever at pheasantsforever.org or quailforever.org. But if you love ducks, consider Delta Waterfowl or Ducks Unlimited. If you consider Rough Grouse Society, whatever, just get involved in conservation. Don't sit on the sidelines. We all need that voice, particularly that those number of members is critically important when we go to Washington, D.C. and talk about policy. So that's the first thing. And Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever are on all your favorite social channels, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And you can find me on all those as well. I'm on Instagram at Pheasant Bob. I'm very active on Twitter, particularly through the radio show on Thursday nights and Saturday mornings. And so it's Bob St. Pierre, no period. And then on you can find me there on Facebook too. I do a podcast for the organization called On the Wing Podcast. That's available anywhere you listen to podcasts as well. So yeah, I'd love for you to follow along, but ultimately just in some way get involved in conservation.
Yeah, absolutely. And I echo that. Like what Bob said, just start doing some research, doing some homework on what chapters are near you, whether it's Pheasants Forever or Quail Forever or a different organization. You know, you can get started tomorrow. There's no reason to wait.
Yeah, you can find the local chapter of pheasantsforeverevents.org, and it'll tell you what banquets are coming up and where they are right in your community. Like, as we're recording this, Colby's banquet is this Saturday night. So it's almost here.
And, you know, one of the things that I try to do with some of my friends and family, that if I'm going to buy them a birthday gift or a Christmas gift or whatever, if I know they're into upland hunting or elk hunting or turkey hunting, I'll try and gift them that extended membership to National Wild Turkey Federation or Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, whatever it is. Sometimes I think that's that little shove and they start getting that magazine, and you know, and it's a gift that's going to last all year, no matter what publication it is, whether it's monthly, quarterly, whatever. They continue to get that throughout the year, and I think maybe it helps them look forward to those seasons. And more than once I've had people, hey, you know, since you gave me that gift of that membership to whatever it was, man, I've kept that up because I don't want to lose that connection.
Thank you. That's a wonderful spirit of giving. I'd also suggest, you know, whether it's hunting partners or landowners who let you hunt their property, those also are great audiences to consider giving the gift of membership.
Perfect.
Well, Bob,
thanks again so much for coming on. We really appreciate your time. We know you're a busy guy. And we look forward to following your podcast and your social media and everything Pheasants Forever and that you've got going on.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'll leave you with, it's only a few weeks now. We'll be in Omaha, Nebraska, with National Pheasant Fest and Quail Classic. It's our Super Bowl of events for the Uplands, March 11th, 12th, and 13th at the CHI Health Center in Omaha. Tickets are online now at pheasantfest.org. And it's next to the Westminster Dog Show. It's the biggest bird dog event in the country. There's a habitat stage, a hunting, all kinds of hunting related things, a wild game cooking stage. So if you like the Uplands in any way, shape, or form, it's the best place to be. So pheasantfest.org, come join us in Omaha.
Awesome.
There you go. Mark your calendars. Bob, thanks for joining us. We're excited about lining up some fantastic guests here in the future as we wrap up some of our late season hunting opportunities here on the Great Plains. So please be sure to keep tuning in and listening to us and invite your friends to listen to the Great Plains Outdoors podcast. Rob, it was great chatting with you. Bob, thanks so much.
Thank you.
See you guys.